kind of where we ended. Let's read Colossians chapter 1, verses 15 through 20. And let's talk about that. We kind of ended last week on this. I really kind of hurried a little bit to get there just because it brought, in its simplicity, it brought conclusion to last week. But let's unpack it now. Let's unpack this text because if there's so much scripture written about problematic points of contention in the church, if there's so much scripture written about it, we probably ought to focus in more on the solution to it than just the problem. Does that kind of make sense? And so as Paul is writing this letter to the church in Colossae, what becomes a point of contention, I've regurgitated this quite a bit, but what becomes a point of contention is that there's false teachers. And what are they, I mean, so every teacher, all right, we're going to break this down blue collar. Everybody like blue collar? We've got a couple blue collars in here. So let's unpack the, you with me? You got white collar on this morning, but we're going to go blue collar. Every teacher has a message. Would you agree? I mean, think about that in terms of simplicity. Every teacher has a what? Message, don't they? Right. And so for practical purposes, let's say every teacher has a message and that message is neutral. It's not good or bad. It's just a message. You with me on that? So we have a thing in society now called new math. Anybody heard that concept before? There's new math. My wife's a math teacher, but she wasn't educated in new math, so she might struggle teaching new math. But I'm not sure why we reinvented the wheel in math. Are y'all? What is that? They're what? Oh, I'm like, wow. But math is math to us, isn't it? I mean, 2 plus 2 equals what? 4. Whew. Thank you, Ginger. Huh. All right. And so every teacher has a message, and that message is neutral. Each of us, you know, something Lana and I have talked about a lot through our marriage, both in our boys and people that we're, you know, especially in young kids that we're closely related to, is that people have abilities and qualities, don't they? Some people are born to be leaders. Would you agree? I mean, they just have that tendency to them. And so you can take all these abilities that are God-given, I believe, that they're God-given abilities, and they're neutral. In our infancy, they're neutral, aren't they? I mean, because think of a person who is blessed with the ability to lead, all right? That's a neutral quality until what happens? Until they decide something. What do they have to decide? To change that ability out of the neutral position. Aaron, think of a stick shift. What do you got to do? Boy, you guys need to wake up this morning. I remember this is the blue collar approach. This isn't even the high theology stuff here. This is just the... So what for if a person has the ability to be a leader, they have that, and I believe that's a God-given trait. Who likes basketball besides Carolyn? All right? There are traits in every athlete that are tangible and intangible. Would you agree? Tangible being something that they have focused and worked and honed and taught themselves that skill. But then there's the intangibles, aren't there? The things that you just can't teach, the things that they either get. I love watching a basketball player that might be rough in their ability in terms of their tangible things, but you can see the intangibles in them. You can see a distinct quality in them that makes them see the court differently than most players. And you can't teach that. They either have it or they don't have it. And so I believe that there are qualities that God has given us in our infancy that are these qualities, these intangible things. But in the intangible, something has to happen for us to decide whether that's a positive or a negative. I'm not sure. There's some stuff I've been teaching like 28 times. Yeah. Believe it or not, that's the framework that I preach from. Absolutely. But in order for ability to be something, it has to either go negative or positive. I mean, I had a nephew growing up, and when Landon and I watched him as a young child, he just had that ability. The ability to lead. And our prayer for him over the course of his life was that he choose to lead in the right direction. Because leaders are going to lead. Y'all get that? Leaders are going to lead. What is the unknown, if you will, is what direction are they going to lead? Because they're going to lead. That's an intangible quality or ability that God has blessed them with, that they have to make a decision how they're going to use that. And so I say that to say teachers teach, right? And they have a message. But it doesn't necessarily mean it's a positive message. It doesn't necessarily mean it's the right message. It just means that they're gifted in the ability to teach. And so as Paul addresses what seems to be a constant throughout the New Testament, particularly after the gospel messages, but what seems to be a constant is this idea of false teachers. This idea of a teacher having a premise that's not in alignment with what God desires. Now, how far out of alignment does that message need to be? Yeah, just be a shade off, right? Just be a shade off. And so as Paul, sometimes I think we can get fixated on the problem, or I think we can get fixated on the solution. And there is a huge difference in those two things. I think I've mentioned in here before, but a friend of mine, Tilt James, the gentleman that officiated Lana and I's wedding, I was talking to him over breakfast one morning. This was probably 15 years ago. He and I were sitting down eating breakfast and talking, and he said, "I have this friend, John." And he said, "Finally, I just asked John one day, 'John, do you think there's like a demon behind every bush?'" And John goes, "No, I think there's like five behind every bush." And the point being is we can fix our attention on the demon. We can fix our attention on the problem. We can fix our attention on everything that surrounds that. Or we can see what God's intention for us in that is. And it's not the problem. It's the solution to the problem. So I'm going to do a little experiment. Aaron, I promise I'm not going to bar you. I want everybody to spend 30 seconds. It's a test. All right? Desiree, you ready? All right. Perfect. See, because you're not, Mark puts you in timeout a lot in Wednesday nights, but I'm not putting you in timeout here. All right. In this test, everybody see that okay? All right. Melanie, you see that all right? In this test, I want you to spend the next 30 seconds, because we don't have that much time. I want you to spend the next 30 seconds looking at the board. And then at the end of 30 seconds, I want you to describe to me what you see. Go. It's a test, by the way. Don't fall asleep. We're going to talk about that during worship, Aaron. All right. No. 30 seconds. See, some of y'all are losing focus already. Aaron, what do you see? Black dot. Melanie, what do you see? Black spot. Tom? Okay. Jan, how about you? What do you see? Black blob? She's not even going to call it a dot. See, we're naturally, instinctively trained to see what somebody wants us to see. When I did that, everybody focuses in on what? Black dot. If you didn't focus in on the black dot, raise your hand. Go ahead. Okay. All right. Most of us have a tendency, not all, but most of us have a tendency to see the problem. And we zero in on that, even though that black blob represents how much space on that whiteboard? Very little. But yet, it took most of our attention. Even for those of you that may have seen the whiteboard, the black dot probably consumed 20 seconds of the 30. All right, especially if I would have done this. Because y'all had the luxury of watching me do the black dot, right? So let's pretend I did this. If I did this, and y'all are watching, right? And then I went like this. Then what would you think? Because something is going to tell you, well, wait a minute. I see a black dot, but Kevin paid some special attention to something on the black dot, didn't he? And so now the focus is drawn even more so into that because there's special attention. He did something. And even though I really didn't do anything, I just finished coloring it in. The bottom line is I spent some extra time on it, which makes you go what? So as a church, we can spend all our time dealing with the black dot or we can see the whiteboard. And that's exactly what Paul's premise is here to the church in Colossae. He's saying, hey, we're going to deal with false teachers, and we're going to talk about that. But you got to see the whiteboard first. There's no sense in talking about the black dot unless you see the whiteboard. Because the whiteboard's what I want you to see. We can get so tunnel visioned in on the fact that there are five demons behind that bush, or we can zero in on the fact that Jesus Christ is Lord. Which one's bigger? But yet, which one consumes our mind? Which one draws our attention? Which one claims our thoughts? Which one takes our focus away from what God's intention is to be? And so, you know, this is a recipe, if you will, that I think you see throughout Scripture, but this is a recipe for sin and how to handle sin. Because sin, it can consume you, can't it? In our humanness, sin can consume. It doesn't matter what kind of sin it is. It can consume you. But God's trying to get us to understand that if we zero in on the sin, it's still consuming you. If you zero in on the remedy, what happens to the sin? Yeah, all of a sudden it's just not that big anymore. All of a sudden that black blob is just a pinprick because what we see is white. What we see is the board. We don't see the black dot. Or though we know it's there, it doesn't take precedence over our mind. And so before Paul deals with false teachers, he wants to set the table. He wants to present the board. He wants to present the board so that the church in Colossae sees what he sees. Because the easiest way to overcome anything negative, whether it's a false teacher or a sinfulness in our church or a sinfulness in self, the easiest way to overcome that is to give authority over to Christ. It is to give the board over to him. Because he's going to help us change our focus on something different. Because the more we focus in on sin, I believe we sin more. Because it's our mind. Man, the mind is a powerful, powerful thing. And what we give our mind to, our flesh follows. I believe that. I believe our flesh follows our mind. And if I'm going to put myself in the best possible position, I want to put my mind on what? That's right. That's putting myself and posturing myself in the best possible position. it's not zeroed in on the imperfections of my heart. And don't get me wrong. I'm not saying, and Paul's going to deal with false teachers. You with me? But in order to deal with the problem, you first need to see the light in the solution. And so as Paul writes in verse 15, he said, "He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation, for by him all things were created in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities. All things were created through him and for him. And he is before all things, and in him all things hold together." Do you guys hear the language of Paul here? Where's he trying to take your brain right now? I want you to see that, because I think it's super vital for us to see. Where is he trying? These people are flustered, okay? Have you ever been flustered or just frustrated? I've been flustered, all right? And when we're flustered, we can't see our way out of a paper bag, can we? I mean, has any of y'all had days like that where it just seems like it doesn't matter which direction you turn, it's going to turn bad? And then it just gets worse. And then it just rolls downhill, right? I read a story last night of a carpenter that was working at a house, and he got there an hour late because his truck broke down, and so he was already flustered, and then as soon as he got to work, he was apologetic to the homeowner because he's like, "Man, listen, I had vehicle trouble, but I'm here. I'm sorry I'm late." So he starts in work, and the skill saw won't work. And then he knocks his thumb with his hammer. I mean, it just seems like one thing right after another. Of course, the guy had to walk the last mile to this guy's house because his truck was broke down. So he asked the homeowner, "Would you please give me a ride home?" And so the homeowner, absolutely. So he loads him up, and they're visiting as they travel back to the carpenter's house. And as they approach the carpenter's house, the carpenter said, "Hey, I'd like you to come in and meet my family. I've got beautiful wife and three young girls. I'd like you to come meet them before you leave." And the homeowner says, "That's fine." So as they start walking into the house, the carpenter reaches up. There's a tree in the front yard. And the carpenter reaches up, puts both hands on the tree, and kind of rubs the leaves, walks in the front door, gives his wife a hug and a kiss, wraps up his little girls in his arms, introduces the guests to his family. And the man, the homeowner, was just astonished at the transformation in the guy. He's like, he went from this troubled, nothing goes right, to walks into his front door, and just all of a sudden something changed. And so as they're walking back out, as the carpenter's walking the homeowner back out to his truck, he said, "I got to ask you, man, what's up with the tree? Because I know the frame of mind you were in, and then you rub the leaves on this tree and walk in the front door, and it looks like you're a different person." He said, "Oh, that's my trouble tree. That's my trouble tree." He said, "I take the day's troubles and I leave it at that tree. Because the troubles that happen out there, I don't need to bring in there. And then when I leave for work the next morning, I come back to the tree and I pick those troubles up. But it's amazing how many troubles aren't there when I go to pick them back up." It's perspective. It's the ability not to allow the troubles of life to negatively impact every nuance of your body, every nuance of your existence. It's the ability to say, "I'm going to leave this at the trouble tree. I'll pick it up later, but I'm going to leave this trouble at the trouble tree. I'm not going to let it consume who I am. I'm not going to let it consume my mind. Because if it consumes my mind," you can ask my wife, please don't, I'd rather you not, but you can, I'm giving you permission, to talk about the times that I come home and I don't rub the trouble tree. And the troubles that I have dealt with through the course of the day that I allow into my front door. And she may not be part, my kids may not have been part of any of those things. Matter of fact, those troubles may not have had anything to do with me, but I had to deal with them. But if I brought them in the front door, they impact my whole house. Anybody ever heard this term? And I'm going to use it, but give me a sec. Don't judge me right away, okay? Anybody ever heard this term, "If mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy"? You know, if daddy ain't happy, ain't nobody happy either. Let that sink in. Because we can bring troubles, can't we? And not only do we allow them to negatively impact me, but I allow them to negatively impact everyone I love. Same holds true for church. Same holds true for church. So I really want us to understand that what Paul is trying to get everyone to understand is he needs us to see Jesus. Before we deal with the problem, you got to see Jesus. Before you deal with the issue, you got to see the whiteboard. There's no sense in dealing with the black blob until you see the whiteboard. Because the whiteboard is what's going to give you sanity through the blob. Because it's Jesus and him crucified. And so what he wants us to see, and he's very intentional with this in verse 15 through about 17, 18. What he intentionally wants us to see is the totality of who Christ is. He doesn't want you to get out of that picture. He doesn't leave an escape hatch for you. All right? Has anybody ever done an escape room? We ought to do that as a church. That'd be fun. Have you ever heard of an escape room? Got a couple people? Yeah? We've done one. You want to talk about bringing out some frustration? All right? Ooh, did you see that look she just gave me? Yeah. It'll bring out some frustration. But what Paul is not doing is he's not giving you an escape. He doesn't want you to allow your mind to get around what he's saying about Jesus because of the verbiage he uses. He is the image of the invisible God. Think about it. What's he not letting you get away from? His image, right? Not just his image, but whose image? God's image, right? He is the image of the invisible God. If you got a pen, highlight this whole text right here. The firstborn of all creation. The firstborn, he's not something different. He's the firstborn of which creation? All creation. Okay? For by him, how many things were created? All things. I want you to see the totality of this text. He's not giving you any wiggle room. All right? And what he's trying to do is draw his reader into the mindset of Christ. He's trying to draw his reader into the supremacy of Christ. He's trying to draw his reader into not seeing anything but Christ. Because the more I see him, the more the blob turns into a pinprick. All things were created. Where at? On earth? Yeah, both locations, right? So I'm not even going to let you out that way. I don't want you to think, oh, it's just down here. Or I don't want you to think, oh, it's just up here. No, 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 no. It's all things on heaven and on earth. No wiggle room. Paul doesn't want to give any wiggle room. All things were created through him and what? For him. Not only were they created through him, but their intention was for him. And he is before all things, right? And in him, all things do what? Hold together. Hold together. So he's even the glue. Man, he gets to be every part. He gets to be creator. He gets to be created. He gets to be the glue. He's all of it. And that's kind of what Paul is trying to get you to see. Before you deal with the problem, I got to get you to embrace the Jesus that I love. The Jesus that I know. It gets better, if you can imagine. And he is the head of the body, the church. Thank goodness. Right? Man, let me read that again because I ought to get at least three amens on this. He is the head of the church. Man, that was weak, y'all. That was totally weak. He's the head of the church. Isn't that cool? You know why that's so cool? Because if we allow him to do his job, he's not going to lead us astray. If we let him be him, he's not going to lead us astray. Man, we need to hear that. We need to hear that. I was asked at Northside, probably 10-ish, 11-ish, I don't know. The older I get, man, those ishes get bigger. a while back at Northside, they wanted to have elder discussions at church. Because like Bayfield at the time, Northside had no elders. And at the time I was teaching one adult class, Jerry Lacey was teaching in another adult class. And they came to us and said, hey, we want to spend the next 3 months teaching on eldership so we can kind of work towards and move towards having elders. At first I said, okay, and then I started looking and reading and I came back to them and said, man, I got like 2 weeks worth of material. 2 weeks? We need this to be like a 3-month thing. I said, man, I can't come up with more than 2 weeks worth of stuff. And I'll never forget Jerry saying, how do you figure? And I'm like, well, a good shepherd's one that looks at the good shepherd. I mean, we can complicate it. I don't like complicated. Anybody in here like complicated? I don't like complicated. A good shepherd acknowledges who the good shepherd is and brings the good shepherd into the church to allow him to be the head of it. A good elder is going to do what? It's going to bow at the foot of the cross. Absolutely. And let Jesus be Jesus. And let the Redeemer be the Redeemer. That's 1 week's class on elders. I'll do the next one next week. We have a tendency to so overcomplicate stuff. You know what I'm saying? But a good shepherd going to look to the good shepherd. I mean, think about it in terms of shepherd. All right. If I'm a shepherd, which any shepherds in here? We got some ranchers, right? And oh, she's looking at Aaron. Are you a shepherd? All right. And you're down in this beautiful valley, right? And man, there's green grass, and you're sitting there, and you're just enjoying the stream that's kind of trickling down through, and there's this beautiful valley, and then you see this ridge up there. And up on that ridge is really the good shepherd, because he's in a perspective to see it all. See what you can't see. See what's over that other ridge. See what harms and dangers might be over there. And a good shepherd down here is going to do what before he moves the flock? He's going to look for direction from up there. Think about that picture, if you will. Because the guy up there with the perspective on life is going to know what's best for his sheep. But if I'm down here and I'm not paying any attention up there, I'm going to lead them right into what? Trouble. Not just lead them into trouble, do what else? Lead myself into trouble. A good shepherd is acknowledging the good shepherd for direction. Anyone that doesn't do that right there, not qualified to be a shepherd. So, that was a commercial. That was a commercial break. All right. Any questions, thoughts, concerns, complaints? If you have a complaint, see Melanie. She's in charge of those today. All right. I forgot to let you know that. Sorry. That goes for worship service too. Any complaints? Right there. She'll let me know, I promise. Verse 19, for in him all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell. How much fullness of God? All of it. All of it. Do you see the case that Paul is making for the totality of who Jesus is? He's saying you don't need to see past that. Because he's seeing past that. How can he see past that? Because he was created. Everything that was created through him and for him. That's how he can see past it and through it and behind it and in front of it. What we need to see is just him. Let him see the rest. Our purpose is to see him. Man, I am so excited. I hope there's more people show up. Aaron, you need to start calling everybody in the bulletin because I'm pretty excited about the sermon this morning. I'm trying really hard not to talk about the sermon this morning. All right? Lost my train of thought. Verse 20. And through him, let's do 19 and 20 together. For in him all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell, and through him to reconcile himself to all things, whether on earth or in heaven, making peace by the blood of the cross. Now, I kind of read that a little bit quicker, but that may be the apex, if you will, of this text. All right? This may be the shining moment in this text, even though this text is incredible. All right? I mean, it is profound. It's incredible. It's amazing. But right there in that one verse, if you only highlight one thing, highlight 19 and 20, okay, and then put two lines under 20. Okay, because there is a purposeful intent to everything in 15 through 18. All right? These are the facts. I'm going to read it different. I'm going to read again 15 through 17. Say these are the facts. All right? And then I want to read 19 and 20 and talk about the result of the facts. If you buy into the facts, and again, we're dealing with false teachers, so we need some facts, don't we? We need some truth. And so if we appreciate and understand and respect the facts, then 19 and 20 are going to be the beauty of the facts, all right, when they all come together. Fact, he is the image of the invisible God. Fact, the firstborn of all creation. Fact, for by him all things were created in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible. Whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things were created through him and for him. Fact, and he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. Fact, he is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in everything he might be preeminent or supreme. Fact, for in him all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell. Result, and through him to reconcile himself to all things. Through him, we have an opportunity at a harmonic relationship. One in harmony. One in harmony with what? And? You did the trifecta. I got one more. And each other. Not, I mean, yes, God, absolutely. Absolutely. But each other, absolutely. I mean, do y'all see that? Because if I'm in harmony with God, right, and then all of a sudden I have an opportunity at harmony with Carolyn, who also desires harmony with God. Because he did all these things so that all creation could have the opportunity to be reconciled to him. Do y'all see that? Reconciled to him. And if we're reconciled to him, what does that mean about us? That wasn't a trick question. It wasn't rhetorical either. If we're in harmony with him, if we've been restored in relationship to him, what does that mean for us? We have harmony too. We have harmony too. Here's the crazy thing. You guys have heard me say this probably over the last, I haven't said it in a little while, but probably several months ago I was kind of really harping on this point. Fellowship seems to be a delicate issue at times because we feel like we all need to get along. We all need to see eye to eye. We all need to this. You know, we all need to start with our left foot when we put our socks on and then to our right foot. I mean, we have this idea, if you will, of unity and this idea of fellowship that's probably a false one, and it's because we're trying to manufacture our own fellowship. We're trying to manufacture our vision of fellowship. And anytime man tries to manufacture something on his own accord, he fails miserably. All right? I can remember a joke I heard years ago about a sorceress or whatever you want to call it, goes toe-to-toe with Jesus and says, I can create anything you can create. Jesus is like, wow, that's pretty impressive. Well, tells the sorcerer, why don't you go first? And he reaches down and grabs a handful of dirt, and Jesus says, what are you doing? He says, well, I'm fixing to create it. He said, well, you can't use that. I already created it. That's it. That's a joke. Y'all get it? Or, wow, we're going to have to wake up, church. Or I need to get better jokes, one or the other. I'm not sure. But the Greek word for reconcile is apokateleso, whatever that means. Well, I know what it means, just don't know how to say it. Refers to the act of restoring a relationship to harmony. The purpose of Christ's death on the cross was to bring all things created by Christ and for Christ, into a harmonious relationship. Now, if you're not in harmony with Christ, what does that mean for his people? That's right. But Carolyn, go ahead, Joe. But Carolyn, I don't know why I always pick on you. Maybe you need to sit over here. I bet I wouldn't pick on you if you sat over here. When you and I don't have harmony, the worst thing either one of us can do is try to restore harmony here. Worst thing. Absolute worst thing. We probably need to start working on restoring harmony here. Hey, I see I scared you for a second, right? Because this doesn't work without this. Fellowship doesn't work unless it's us embracing the fellowship that was already established by God. Perfect fellowship is the picture of Jesus, God, and the Holy Spirit. That's perfect fellowship. They're in unity together. They're of like-mindedness. And we have been invited into that place of fellowship. Anything other than that right there is not a proper sense of fellowship. Right. Yep. To live is Christ and to die is gain. Some of Paul's words. The understanding of who I am. Because my understanding of who I am isn't dictated on this level, on this plane. Who I am is dictated by my relationship to Christ. And so before we can deal with a false teacher, before you can deal with an issue in the church, before you can deal with the black blob, you need to see the supremacy of Christ. And Paul's intention with the church in Colossae was for them to see Christ. How much of him? All of him. The fullness of who he is. And what you see in these five verses, that's what I love. It's just packed in there. What you see in these five verses is the supremacy of who Jesus is. Not just on earth, but in heaven. Not just over the living, but over the dead. Not just over us as humans, but over what else? Demons. If you were at Mark's class Wednesday night, you know, one of the stories that was referenced was Jesus going into the synagogue to teach and coming face to face with an unclean spirit. And as soon as he comes in, the unclean spirit recognizes who Jesus is. But not Legion. This was prior to Legion. But that's another one. But he walks into the synagogue and comes face to face with an unclean spirit. And the first thing the unclean spirit does is go, "Hey, be easy on me." Isn't that amazing? Because there's something profound in the simplicity of that story. That the demons can't rebel from his authority. But we do. Isn't that amazing? That we've been granted a free opportunity to rebel against the authority of Christ, but even the demons can't do that. Think about that for a second. That to me is a profound way of thinking. Because his authority isn't just on earth. It's also in heaven. It's in every spiritual realm. And they can't even deny that. Isn't that incredible? But yet we choose to deny it a lot. So a lot of it comes down to the authority. These are all cool little facts about who Jesus is. But unless you allow him the authority in your existence, then all they are is just cool facts. Because they're not going to enhance your way of living at all. Until you give him the authority that he asks for, that he desires. That unfortunately he can't demand on us, but he does demand in the spiritual realm. That they can't even get around it. Y'all have a good week. Joe's waving at me. I don't think he's telling me hi either.